Jackson gave me the news of a planet far away. And Colonel O'Neill will assemble a team that will try to save the day. Dr. Sam has a master plan and a science attitude. And the Jaffa Teal, he's part of the deal with his trusty Goa'u. It's just a regular day at Stargate Command, and it might be hard to understand.
To Three Fries Short. It's Woo! Kind of like, listen, we've been gone for a long time, but by the time you get this episode up, we both have been gone for a long time because we have an episode in the bank before.
Don't
this
you like
one.
How that
do like do how we? That works.
We have
so
one.
It's like
we have one in the bank.
So truly it's been a while. It had been a while in between ones we had already done. So you've already been through the waiting period. Now we're a little bit back on schedule.
And now we're right, you know, like we can totally see into the future and know that we will totally be back on schedule now.
We are.
Life has not and will Life not throw us any more curveballs and we will be back on schedule.
Well, listen. I mean, it will, but we can handle it. I think we got thrown the craziest of crazies. It can't get crazier. We're good.
Agree.
Also, I turned 40 in there. That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. I swam with the sharks.
Cool. That was exciting. With the sharks.
Cool. That was so cool.
It was a good
40th birthday, and then everything headed downhill after that.
It's fine. Start your 40s
literally
off
over
on
the hill
note.
At this point. It's all good.
Oh, sad.
It's all good.
So sad. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm excited that we're back.
Yeah.
Do we have any news?
Oh God.
Other than we're back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's big.
Come out of hiding.
There's companion news.
Yeah, there is companion news. So we do have on May 21st is going to be Stargate AI 2.0. So if you are part of the companion, or you can reach out to us, we can get you set up with access into there and how that all works. We can talk you through it. But yeah, on the companion on May 21st, there will be Stargate AI script reading. It's pretty exciting because we do have Jack is back. It's Jack, Sam, and Daniel.
Yeah.
The OG crew.
I'm excited.
It's going to be awesome.
It is really exciting. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it. I mean, it's been a long pause, so.
Yeah.
It has been. It was much needed, though.
In that time frame, I don't know if it was before our pause or, like, during it, but our 1 year anniversary is in there somewhere. Like,
it really is.
It's a blur.
It was right around my birthday. So yeah.
Cause I think we started recording a lot of we did a couple episodes in March, I think, of last year to get them in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we started releasing them at the end of March, beginning of April. So one whole year, guys.
Happy one year to us. Woo-woo.
With a couple of breaks in there. But that's
normal, though.
Reasonable.
That happens.
We just didn't warn anyone about the break.
Sorry.
Our bad.
I mean, that's the whole free ball in it. It's just, you never know. Free ball in it. Literally, in life, free ball in. But no, this is actually, I'm excited about the episode we're talking about coming back in. This is a big one. This is one of my favorites.
So we're talking about season 2, episode 15, The Fifth Race. This is a big one. And I feel like anytime you see like an article, top 10 episodes of Stargate SG-1, this is always on that list.
Mm-hmm.
The ranking may differ, but this is always on that list. It's kind of like what I feel is the quintessential Stargate SG-1 episode. You could kind of watch it as a standalone and still follow along with it and see what's happening. But also, it has incorporated that meta arc into it, where it refers back to a lot of stuff that we've learned so far and mm-hmm. we will cover all of that
today. I definitely feel like it is one of those episodes that, you know, when you have a show that you like and you try to think of an episode you would show someone to try to get them into it, because it's not mm-hmm. always, it's rarely going to be the first episode of a show, because usually those are not that good, honestly. They're pilots. So
yeah. There's a lot of like introductory groundwork and typical growing pains mm-hmm. in the first couple of episodes, let alone the first one. It's funny that you say that though, because when I was researching this episode, this was the first episode of many to premiere on Sky One in the UK oh. prior to the broadcast on Showtime and the Sci-Fi channels in the US. So it's kind of like the UK was like, here's the perfect episode of Stargate to get you hooked. You're welcome.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Coming out the gate strong for the UK.
I like it, but it makes so much sense because of what you're saying. It is, in such a high level way, it does anchor back to kind of some foundations that were laid. Oh, sorry, my AC just kicked on. I forgot to turn that off. So sorry if that got really loud in the background. We're going to keep it.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Freeballing it.
We're freeballing it. I'll go turn it off in a second. But it's cool because then it does let us think forward, because there's things that are introduced that you're going, wait a second. Oh, there's a lot of other opportunity there. And we've only scratched the surface. And I think that's really cool because I don't know of any. I mean, I try to think about, because now I've started X-Files from the beginning. Hmm. So I'm like waiting to kind of feel out, like, are there any spaces within any shows that I rewatch where they lay it out in a similar way, where it kind of makes you go, wow, there's a storyline that's coming and I can't wait to get to the end of it. But this one does that for sure.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go turn my AC off.
Okay, we shall hold.
No, keep going. I'm going to mute myself.
We're still going to hold.
We're going to wait. Did you start watching Strange New Worlds?
Not yet.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Everybody's all about it. I have so much Trek to catch up on.
I never watched Discovery though, and I'm scared to because of all the hate. I don't want to have like preconceived notions.
But it is hate from people that you probably don't agree with anyway.
Can I just tell you a story real quick? Sidetrack.
Because
mm-hmm. Adam is on the like, he watches Discovery, but he kind of like hate watches it. He's not all about it. And he was like, yeah, they got this like failed politician to play like the president of Earth. Hold, please hold. I promise you. Because girl. I was like, I think I heard about it. I'm like, was it a black lady? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, that's Stacey Abrams. She's a huge voter rights activist. She's the reason that Georgia turned blue.
Yes.
She's not failed. She helped so many people in impoverished like communities and neighborhoods register to vote because like they, you know, she like, and he was like, oh, I don't know where I heard. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what articles you're reading, buddy, but
yeah, Stacey Abrams, the perfect person to play the president of Earth. Like,
yeah. And then
I love that.
I was talking like, listen, because they were like, I saw a TikTok. I'll just see if I can find it and send it to you. But they were talking about how people are saying, oh, Strange New Worlds, that's how you do Star Trek, not Discovery. That's bullshit. And there, he was like, did you miss the part when they say the Third World War started because of conservative extremism? Did you miss that? Because that was in Strange New Worlds. Like, did you miss that? So, he still watches Discovery, though. I don't know why, if he seems like he doesn't like it. But I was like, pause. Not a failed politician.
No.
Not
also, if you want to watch Discovery, Aki has a podcast that follows Discovery. From like episode one, so you could watch cool. and then listen to his podcast. It's called Set Phasers. This is his podcast name. So
definitely check that out.
You know, he does the same sort of thing we do, but like for Discovery, and then on through Picard too. And he's probably going to do Strange New Worlds too. So
Anyway,
love it. Love it.
Failed politician. I'm sorry.
I don't know where I heard that from, who, what reviews he's watching, but I was like, was it black lady? Because I think I had read something about it. And I was like, no.
We're not going there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 100% a massive political statement to put her as the president of Earth, but it is 100% a massive political statement that I can get behind. Like, they're just, Discovery is basically just like, we're going to be as progressive as we want to, and buckle up, buttercup, because we're going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway,
love it.
We're going to mark our, other time. We can start back talking.
10.45. All right. So we are again talking about season 2, episode 15, The Fifth Race. And of course I have taken notes.
No. Lovely shocker. Notes. Shocker. Notes?
So right away, this episode opens up with Daniel calling back to the repository of knowledge they found when they rescued Ernest. So Torment of Tantalus, Ernest, the small, naked old man, Catherine, that whole thing. And the four alien languages indicates that it was a meeting space for four alien races. 2 days ago, they received footage from a map they sent to another planet where some of the same symbols of an alien language were found. So they were found on Ernest's planet, and now they're finding it on this other planet. So they're like, cool, we need to check this place out. Mm-hmm. Based on a Norse rune at the bottom of one of these inscriptions, they conclude that one of the four races was Thor's race, the Asgard. So that would make the aliens that belong to this other language their allies. So they're like, we like the Asgard. They're pretty cool and chill. We want to meet these other people because they seem pretty cool and chill by association.
Mm-hmm.
And Teal'c says, we need to check this out. He was like, he's like, this seems like a world worth exploring or whatever. His Teal'c.
Don't get so excited, Teal'c.
The fact that he speaks up is his being excited.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, cut to, they arrive on the planet, and it just appears to be a chamber with no exit. The only thing besides the Stargate is this circle of symbols on the floor. And Jack is like, this is a waste of time. Like, we need to go. This is dumb. Like, there's nothing here. But Sam has questions, as always. She's like, where's the power coming from? Where's the life support coming from? What's the deal with, why is this place even here?
I just want a shirt that just says, Sam has questions.
Yes. There are questions to be had.
Sam has questions.
So, again, Jack's like writing the whole place off. He's like, this is dumb. We need to go. But then he walks through the circle of symbols on the floor, and this device appears on the wall. And Teal'c first looks into it, and he's like, darkness filled with flashing colors, or whatever he says to describe it. And then Jack looks into it, and the device like extends from the wall, like shoots out. It grabs his head. There's this high-pitched sound with like flashing colors, and then the device releases his head and he falls to the floor unconscious. This is very reminiscent of facehuggers in Alien. So you automatically have that bad feeling of, I don't like where this is going. Like, I've seen this happen before and it did not turn out well. So whenever someone's face or head gets hugged by some kind of alien thing,
it's never good.
Bad things are going to happen.
Well, it's also the ultimate, like, the most, like, you get grabbed other places, but like your face, like, in, like, that's,
yeah, like the whole,
it's super distressing. Like, the whole idea is just really distressing.
Yeah.
Ugh. No.
And it also didn't seem like pleasant. It kind of seemed painful and very uncomfortable. So then we have the opening credits, and Frasier is checking Jack out. He appears to be fine, but Sam was telling him, you were catatonic for a whole hour. Like, you didn't speak. You were just like not there at all for a whole hour, and now you feel fine? Sounds fake to me. So during the debriefing, they discuss what happened, and they theorize the device did not work on Teal'c because of him being a Jaffa. So it's a racist alien device. But they find that a lot of technology does not work with Gould physiology. And there are some pieces of technology that only work for Gould physiology. Mm-hmm. So, and then Jack, you know, they're kind of talking and discussing it, and Jack appears to be really irritable. And Sam and both Hammond ask him if he's okay. And he's kind of snippy, and he says, I'm absolutely fine. There's nothing Kruvis with me. And they all look at him like, what the fuck did you just, what?
I love Daniel. Daniel's like, you, because they're arguing. Daniel's like, no, you absolutely just said that. Like, just the way he's just like, nice try, buddy. Like, you can fool everyone else, but I'm like, but he's also like, the way that Daniel Jackson, like, in that scene, he's so intrigued. You can tell he's just like, oh, something really cool is happening. Yeah. Really cool. I want to be a part of this. But also, no, Jack, you something's really wrong with you. Like, Michael Shanks did a great job, like, in rewatching that scene today. Which, side note, I was able to attend Michael Shanks did lessons in acting. Ooh. Like 2 weekends ago, and I was able to go, and there were like 20 of us online. So it was interesting to hear Michael Shanks talk about his portrayal of Daniel. So now I like analyze even more how he did certain scenes.
Nice.
So anyway, side note.
It reminded me when they were going back and forth of siblings, because Daniel was like, you just had Krubis, and no, I didn't. Yeah, you did. Nuh-uh. Yeah-huh. Nuh-uh. Yeah. Like, it was very much like brothers arguing. Mm-hmm. And Jack did say, would it Krubis? He did say this word, but he doesn't realize he said it, and he doesn't remember saying it. It was just a word that came out. It just happened. So they are all confused, and Hammond tells Jack to take some time to relax, but stay here. Don't go anywhere. We need to keep eyeballs on you. Cut to the gym. This was a super funny scene with him and Teal'c.
I love that, like, the whole, like, go relax, don't leave the base, and then it's, they go boxing. They go to the gym.
Right.
With Teal'c, of all people, with Teal'c. Like, you're signing up to get your butt kicked.
You know what, though? I thought about it. I'm like, maybe that's a way to, like, test if there's, like, strength things happening, too. Like, maybe that's a way to, like, test them without testing them. I don't know.
Kind of like an upgrades, which we'll get to episode. But there's a gym scene in that episode as well. I also like seeing this... It's there for a reason. It's there to kind of like show what's about to happen with him saying words. He's not realizing it. But I also appreciate that we get this scene between him and Teal'c where he's he's friends with Teal'c outside of all of the stuff they do. He's showing him Earth culture. He's engaging with him like a friend. So I like to see this friendship between them. And it's a very honest friendship too. So if we just want to read through this, because it was really funny. So I put this dialogue here. If you guys can read through this.
Yeah.
It's just Teal'c and Jack.
I'll be Teal'c.
Okay.
Okay. What is the reason for these padded gloves, O'Neill?
So we don't hurt each other. I'll be honest with you, Teal'c. It's so you don't hurt me.
If our purpose is not to cause each other harm, why then are we doing battle?
What can I tell you? It's boxing. It's fun. Come on.
So he tries to explain to Teal'c, like, move around. You got to dance. You got to move. And Teal'c is like, I thought we were doing battle. Why are you calling it dancing? And he gets a good punch in. He knocks, like, he clocks him in the face. Jack falls over. And then there's this other bit of dialogue.
Keep your hands up. You got to keep moving your feet moving and bend your kozars. Keep your kozars bent.
I am unfamiliar with that word.
What? Kozars? Kozars.
Teal'c's just confused.
You gotta bend your kozars.
I believe you are referring to your legs, O'Neill.
Yep. So we get that scene. He's, again, saying words that are different, that don't mean what he thinks they mean. We can just tell by the context of the word what they're supposed to mean. So they bust into Daniel's lab, and Jack is like, what the hell is wrong with me? What's going on? And we get another one. He says, well, apparently I have lost the phylatus to speak properly. And he's like, that wasn't a joke. I didn't do that on purpose.
I love, because he's like, just stop. It's getting out of control. I love it.
Yeah.
So, oh, God.
Several times he's used strange words in place of common terms. Daniel starts to look up the term that he just said, phylatus, and it's always Latin. Why is it always Latin? He's like, well, faculatus in Latin means to speak or the ability to speak or something. Mm-hmm. So phylatus, like, it's always Latin. That's always Latin. It's never like Spanish.
Well, because Latin's the root of all those.
Yeah.
The root of all those. But yes.
So Jack sees the symbols from the planet, the circle that he walked through. on the computer screen, and he starts to speak the language. He is reading it. And Daniel's like, are you reading this? And Jackie's like, I don't know. Like, you tell me. I have no idea. He's kind of pissed off. He's like, I don't know what's happening.
I just love it because he's like, I don't know. The words are just popping in my head. Like, you explain it to me. I don't know.
And Daniel says, I don't know. I haven't even been able to associate the sounds to the symbols. Do you know what this means? And he says, no, I'm just looking at it and the words pop into my fron.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a theme here that when you think about it, it's very disturbing. But he's kind of losing control over all of his faculties and his bodily, like, essentially his autonomy, because he ends up doing stuff physically that he can't restrain himself from doing.
Mm-hmm.
So cut to Daniel and Sam. Daniel is explaining either the language is similar to medieval Latin. Jack is in the infirmary now, but he went there. But before he went there, he wrote a bunch of math stuff on the chalkboard in about 30 seconds. And Sam says, even the simple equations don't make any sense. It's like no math she's ever seen. So you know that's some serious shit when it's like, We have the math fucking queen over here and she's like, I got nothing.
Sam has questions.
Sam has questions. Lots of
questions.
Lots of them.
So back to the infirmary. Janet explains that a normal human brain operates at 5 to 10% of its functional capacity at any given time. Jax is operating at 90%.
That has always blown my mind. Like, the fact that we only use 5 to 10% of our brain.
I think it's actually kind of been disproven. Disproven.
Something else I learned, and I don't know if you can attest to this, Rebecca, if you know, but I guess that, like, the human brain is so, like, mushy and stuff that you can't pick it up with your hands without, like, destroying it. And any brain that we have, like, it has to be, like, chemically altered to stay in peace, one piece. I'm just stunned that, like, a glob of junk in here is making me depressed. Like, produce chemicals, you soggy lump of crap. Sorry, Christina.
Well, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm just going to keep it vague on that.
It's just wild to me that, a lump of gray matter is why I'm sad.
It's amazing. Like, it's actually incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Brains are pretty amazing.
But also you can function properly.
But it's so interesting because in that same process, like, of feeding your brain or, like, the endorphins, there are things you can do to try to, like, not rewire it, but, like, to, like, balance. I don't know. Like, not let it always be in control, but try to put some control back on it, which... total sidebar, but, like, the idea of, like, meditation or things like of that to just, like, cleanse or do other things. It's interesting. I did a past life regression meditation I'll tell you guys about later. Ooh. That was wild. It's not related to our podcast, but that can be in it. It's wild.
Sam has questions.
Sam has skeptical questions. Oh, they're skeptical for sure. But at the end of the day, like, it's just as relevant to, like, the whole brain capacity and function. Like, it's interesting to get your brain to a space where it can maybe imagine things or get to a weird calm to where other things can really pique your creativity or your visualization process. That's more what's intriguing about it. So that's when we talk about, like, him going to using over 90% of his brain. I'm so fascinated, even though, like you're saying, it's been disproven, but that concept of, like, tapping into more is wild of, like, what you could do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So poor Jack's in overdrive.
Yeah. So Teal comes looking in for him, only to find that, like, he's lost. Like, well, he's not here. He should be down. Well, he's not there. Oh, shit. We lost him. We lost him. So Sam ends up finding him in the armory. He is deconstructing a staff weapon, and he pulls out a capsule of glowing green liquid Naquina, like the power source for the staff weapon. He says he needs it, but he doesn't know what for. So I have a piece of dialogue here. We have Hammond, Frazier, Daniel.
Well, we know who has to do
and
Hammond.
And there's a Carter in there, too.
I can do the one Carter and then the Hammond
stuff. And I'll do Daniel.
And I'll do Frazier.
Alrighty. Do you think his current condition poses any threat?
Sir, I don't even know what's wrong with him. All I can tell you is that his brain function has increased tenfold.
Jack was able to read the alien language, both the inscription from the wall, the meeting place on Ernest's planet, and the circle of symbols from 272, where this happened to him.
What does it mean?
Well, my translation's a little bit vague. I think the circle means the place of our legacy, or could be a piece of our leg. But the first seems to make more sense.
The point is, Colonel O'Neill is unwillingly speaking an Anglian language.
What if this device somehow downloaded an alien language into Jack's brain?
So then Teal comes in. I thought the piece of leg was kind of funny. But Teal comes in and he's like, I request assistance in the gate room. And Jack is on a computer inputting code. Sam is now locked out and Jack is unable to stop. Hammond is like, please stop. And he's like, I would love to, but I cannot. I physically cannot. So Sam says, sir, this is machine code. The numbers the colonel was entering must have been some sort of program. And Teal'c physically has to remove him from the computer station. And he like freaks out. He starts shouting and he like reaches forward and does a couple more keys and then hits enter. And he's like, okay, I'm done now. And there was this moment where it was so funny because Sam is his inferior or... like, he is superior to Sam. Like, he is a colonel. And
subordinate.
She looks at him and she's like, what did you do? It was so accusatory and just like, what did you do? It was so funny that she was just...
well, because he's fucking around with her program. Like,
yeah, he's like, messing up my shit.
I would be pissed.
I worked very hard on this.
Right?
But it was because that superior dynamic was kind of gone for a split second. And it was very human... like, what did you do? Oh my god. So we see the destination map come up with all the stargates that they have charted, but then more stargates come up that were not charted before. And Sam says, that's not possible. It takes days to calculate the planetary shift in each new location. And these are stargates that were not listed on the Abydos cartouche. So, flashback to the pilot... all of the planets they have in the database came from this cartouche on Abydos, where they were like, oh, cool, the Stargate goes to other places. That's all that they were working off of before. Jack types in a couple things for 20 minutes, and now all of these new Stargates are popping up. So, Daniel says, this is like one of the big speeches. Here. He says, well, I guess that thing must have downloaded more than a language into your brain. That circular inscription read, the place of our legacy. What if that thing you looked into was some sort of alien database? Like the one we found on Ernest's planet. All of the knowledge that these particular aliens possessed. So it's not just a language, it's a whole repository of knowledge given to him and essentially downloaded into his brain. So Hammond puts Jack on lockdown and he even says, like, you're not under arrest, but you can't leave. Can't go home. You have to stay here. And he's not allowed to touch anything else on the base. So it's like no computer access, no access to the armory, nothing like that. So later that day, Jack and Daniel are in the lab working on the translation. And Sam is coming back from working on the computer because she's like trying to figure out all the shit that he did to it. And he rewrote massive amounts of the database code. And Jack has also lost the ability to now speak anything but the ancient language, which kind of stinks. Like, he's slowly losing his ability to communicate at all. He can still write stuff down in English and communicate that way, but anything he's trying to speak out loud is the alien language. So...
do we want to read through this dialogue? Because I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So it's basically Carter and Daniel. You guys got this?
Go ahead.
Which starts with who?
I think that's Daniel.
Oh, yeah. So it says, So essentially, okay, so Jack's lost the ability to speak and they're all kind of in there and they're just talking it through. So Daniel's like, but the good news is we seem to have more of the alien inscription translated. Nu ani anquitas, we are the ancients.
Who are the ancients?
Well, I think they could be the teachers of Rhodes. See, the Romans were the first real road builders. They spoke Latin and they learned to build roads from the gods, known as the ancient ones. Rhodes. Stargates, the gate builders. What if these ancients were the alien race who invented the Stargate? Well, that would be certainly explain why Jack knew about Stargates that the Gould haven't even discovered yet.
I don't know, Daniel. Why would they invent a device that would do this?
The place of our legacy? To pass on their knowledge. Jack may have the knowledge of the original gate builders downloaded into his brain.
So this touches on something that we've kind of touched on before, that at first they didn't know who built the Stargates. They thought maybe mm-hmm. it was the Gould, because they knew where all these other Stargates were. But now that they have found other Stargates that the Gould know nothing about, it only cements it further down that the Gould did not build the Stargates. Someone else did. Who were they? Like,
mm-hmm.
what race of people were they? Who are they? And where can we find them? So Jack says something to Daniel and he kind of translates it to, I need a new location. But Jack, he wants to go somewhere, but he doesn't know where. And they ask that, and Sam's just like, I gotta go back to the computer. I'm still sorting through all this shit that you fucked up. But then she indicates to the math that he wrote on the chalkboard. She's like, I really wish you could explain this. And he hands her a pad and it says something like 10 equals 8. And Sam looks at him and she's like looking at the board and she says, this is base 8 math. Now, I tried to look up what the hell base 8 math is.
Yeah.
And it's apparently, from what I understand, it only uses numbers 1 through 7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like coding, programming, a lot of computer tech is all isn't it? I think a lot of that is also in 8 base math.
I don't think so. I mean,
or 2, but there's, it's on a different binary. It's on a different.
Right. So like, think about our numbers. And if you count up, you count up to 10 and then mm-hmm. it kind of repeats itself for the next round.
It just
right?
goes to 8 and then starts again.
Yeah. So you'd have 1 through 8 and then you'd have, instead of 11, you would have like, or instead of 10, you would have, you know, the equivalent.
Well, it really, it, I think it's 0 to 7, because then 8 mm-hmm. starts it over. Because so it's 0 right. to 7, and then it's like whatever the number, however they would do it, it mm-hmm. just rotates through.
Yeah. It just, so instead of counting to 10 and everything kind of being based in 10, it's 8 instead.
So 8 is the worst number. I'm sorry. I think I talked about this before. But anytime there's a multiplication, like times 8, done. I'm immediately stupid. Can't figure it out. It's the worst
no.
number.
Oh, you get
it's
it.
Worse.
It's not even like that. It's like, think of a pie that's in 10 slices.
Yeah.
And think of a pie that's in 8 slices or multiple, you know, like you have 10 slice pies and then you have 8 slice pies. Like,
because yeah. then it would go like 8, 16, 24, 32. Like, that's its jump progression. So, like, yeah. It's a whole...
But it's crazy. It's this crazy math.
it's crazy. That's,
yeah.
It'll make your head hurt for sure. But yeah.
So we have Frasier again. She says, the problem may only be affecting the verbal language center of your brain. It's a different function than writing, but it looks like the problem is advancing. Since he lost the ability to speak gradually, I think whatever has affected him may be taking over incrementally. Daniel asks, what's the worst case scenario? She says, well, your computer analogy is pretty good. Colonel, your hard drive has been filled with information that is written in a language your computer does not understand. If it continues to progress the way it has further, you may eventually lose the ability to write or even comprehend us, or worse, the computer could shut down altogether. So he's basically, his brain is overloaded. This knowledge was not meant for the human brain to handle, and he is slowly losing the ability to function.
It's so sad.
It really is. And there's a lot of like real world analogies that we can compare it to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of the road he's on if they don't figure out how to fix it. So in the meantime, Sam has been sending probes to these new stargates, and P9Q281 has a pedestal near the gate with the symbols on it that match the alien language that he is speaking. So they want to go, but Daniel and Jack are going to stay behind to work on the translation. And there's some dialogue here. You can read that.
And sir, I believe that the equation Colonel O'Neill wrote on the blackboard is a revolutionary formula for calculating the distance between planetary bodies.
And bottom line, sir, what about Jack? I mean, right now, I'm possibly his only hope for communicating on any kind of serious level. I can't leave him like this, and I won't.
So that was that, like, they wanted to all go, but Daniel was the voice of reason of saying, hey, I don't think Jack should go anywhere. I think he needs to stay here. We're working on translating this language, which is the only hope we have of understanding anything. And I'm not going to go and leave him behind. That's not fair to him. So it was really nice. I thought it was a very thoughtful thing of Daniel to do when he's thinking of Jack in this time that he's in this very tumultuous place where he doesn't know what's happening to himself. So
yeah,
Jack keeps telling Daniel that they need to get through the Stargate. He doesn't know where to go. He doesn't know. Like, he types it on the computer screen. I need to go through the Stargate, but I don't know where to go. And then Sam and Teal'c and the rest, they call it SG-1, but it's just Sam and Teal'c and some other dude. Mm-hmm. Well, I forget who it was.
Just the fillers. The fillers.
The red shirts, if you will. But they all survive. So Hammond dials out. They dial out to see, like, what's the scoop, man? Like, why are you coming home? And Sam's face comes up on the screen. Rebecca, would you like to read this?
Sure.
Go for it.
Do not send rescue team. Repeat, do not send rescue team. Sir, we're in a little trouble here. We can't dial out. The DHD seized up when we tried to send the probe back. Temperature here is increasing rapidly, which probably explains why we haven't found indigenous life forms. The probe data did not reveal a second sun, which rose about half an hour ago. General, we're going to get a heck of a sunburn if we stay here much longer. Teal'c's attempting a manual dial now, sir, but we can't do anything with the wormhole open from your end.
So they're in a bad place.
Very bad place.
It's getting warm.
It's getting hot.
As a very white, pale person.
It's going to be real miserable. Fun. No. No.
So in the meantime, we see that Jack is building something and he doesn't know what he's building. He's just doing it.
Seems very Jack O'Neill throughout the whole show. Something he does.
In the briefing room, they're working on sending some things through to help Sam and Teal'c get the rest of fake SG-1 that's there. And to help protect them from the heat. So it's like Siler and this random engineer. And I didn't want to include this, but there was a really funny part that gets called back to, which is why I did. But they're talking about, like, okay, well, we're going to give them some, like, heat-resistant tents and some, like, generators to help them cool off and whatever, like, buy them time. And, like, we got to figure out how to fix the DHD, da 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 da. And Daniel says, it sounds like they have no idea, like, what's going on. And this engineer guy, this random guy, is like, well, it's not no idea, sir. Just not much of one yet. But we're working on it.
Love Siler. But we're working on it.
Put a pin in that. We'll come back to that. So there's another Sam transmission coming in. Rebecca, would you like to read?
Manual dial-in failed, sir. DHD is stuck mid-dial and seems to be locking the gate in place. By my calculations, we could be facing a temperature of over 200 degrees Fahrenheit in less than 4 hours. General, I don't think you understand how hot it's going to get. Nothing you send us will provide enough protection. We'll be dead before the end of the day, sir.
What a way to
go, man. So just like nonchalantly, yeah, we'll be dead.
But, what else are you? But it's also like, don't waste the resources. Just keep them. We're dying. It's fine.
Not me. I'd be like, give me that shit. Send me that heat resistant tent and the AC.
I'd be like clinging on.
Some blocks of ice. Minute. We're going to do it.
Again, like, seemingly okay with, like, yeah, we're totally like 200 degrees, man. We're going to be dead soon. I'd be like, give me all the shit. I do not want to go out like this.
You're like, I'm going to have my AC until the end.
The need for self-preservation is real, guys.
I would have self-sacrificed at a heartbeat. I would have been like, don't send it. I'm dead.
No,
I would have been like, we're dead. We're dying. We're dead. And they'd be like, calm down. Too,
But I'd also be like, I don't want to know. Give me all the shit. Give me everything. All of it. Send it through. I don't want to die.
Oh, God.
Especially, like, cooking to death like that. Mm. No thanks. Definitely no. Hard no for me. Give me that heat-resistant fucking blanket shit or whatever you got.
Pass.
So Jack has completed building whatever this device was. And he like turns it on, and it's basically like a nightlight. It just lights up. And he's like, I don't know what it does. It just, there you go.
They built this thing.
And Daniel shows him this footage of Sam explaining the situation that she's in. And
I'll read Daniel.
This is really, I want to read Daniel. I had to include this. I'll be Fraser.
Okay. So Daniel says, look, no one else believes that you have the knowledge of the original gate builders in your head right now, except me. And O'Neill grabs some paper, drawing equipment, starts drawing, blah, blah, blah. And then watching Fraser.
What's he doing?
I don't know.
Do you think he's going to help us?
I really don't know. And like O'Neill starts writing something and whatever. And it just says.
Gives it to Daniel.
It says, shut up and go away.
So he's still in there. Like that's Jack. He's still in there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Sam's face like remains awkwardly up on the computer screen in the background. Like, can you like shut that off? I don't need to like be reminded that my friend is going to be cooked alive. Or maybe people do. I don't know. That's a good motivator, but it's kind of awkward.
Yeah.
If that was me, I'd be like, shut that shit off. I don't want my face up there like that. So,
oh my god.
Daniel, O'Neill, and Fraser hurriedly enter the briefing room with the plans O'Neill was drawing up and his machine. And they interrupt that engineer and Tyler. So that weird engineer that was like, it's not no idea, just not much of one yet. And right. Daniel says, yeah, I'll be the engineer.
All right. So we weren't sure what he was drawing at first, but
that's the Dow Home device.
And the instructions on how to fix it. There isn't much time.
So as they leave, the scientist, Daniel puts O'Neill's device on the table.
Okay, here. You guys can work on this for a while.
What is it?
No idea. Well, not no idea. Just not much of one yet. But work on it.
So he just like turns that around on him like, figured out. Sassy Daniel coming out. I like it.
Love Sassy Daniel.
So the plans work and Sam and Teal'c are able to gate home. And
they're a little charred.
They're like crispy. No, they're crispy.
Only Sam is. Teal'c looks as fresh as a daisy, man. He doesn't look that bad.
So his symbiote, you know, was probably protecting him.
Yeah. But
like, imagine the makeup Carter had to go through or that Amanda Tapping had to go through for that. She looked real crispy.
But not like sunburnt. It just looked like.
Like she got baked in an oven.
Yeah. Like, honestly, burnt. Like,
Literally burnt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Does not sound like fun.
No.
So they begin to focus on the device that Jack built, and Sam is called into the gate room, and they're attempting to send a team through one of these new stargates Jack input into the system, but the gate is trying to draw more power. And they did not waste any time sending people through here. Like, I don't think they tried to send a probe first. They're like, we're trying to send a team through this new place. Like, you just had a situation where you did that and it turned out badly. Like, maybe you should let the mouse kind of sit on there and collect some information to make sure there's not like six fucking suns and you're not gonna die if you go through.
That would require,
I'm just being picky at this point.
Yeah,
but Jack grabs his device, his spidey sense tingles because he's not in the gate room, but all of a sudden he's like, I know what this is for. And he grabs the device and he goes to the main breaker or power source of where the gate draws its power from. And in the gate room, we see that it gets a huge burst of power from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this piece of dialogue. This is actually kind of long.
That's not long. Simmons, though, right? Like, it says Simmons, but isn't that...
It's not Walter. It's the guy that has a crush on Sam.
Yeah, it's the other guy.
Okay. The, his the name wasn't guy. Simmons, though. It was something else.
I think
else.
It was.
Simmons is like... I don't know.
Okay, so, all right, so I can be, well, why don't you do Carter and Hammond?
I'll do Simmons.
And then I'll just do Daniel.
Okay. So, Chevron 7 is encoded.
And it's not the point of origin?
Min Hammond.
Oh, what?
General, what if all these anomalies that have been happening to Jack are part of some big plan?
What plan?
Well, earlier Jack was telling me he had to go through the gate. Maybe everything up until now has been leading to this.
What's it doing?
Chevron 8 is locked. Wormhole is tracking. Captain?
Sir, the computer indicates that the wormhole is leaving our known network of stargates. It's going outside of our galaxy, far out.
That's why the gate needed all the extra power.
Hold on. I thought stargate addresses were just 6 points in space, with the seventh being the point of origin. The extra chevron must add a new distance calculation to the existing points. It's kind of like dialing a different area code. And O'Neill looks at Hammond, and Hammond looks at O'Neill, and Hammond says, "Now what?" And then O'Neill starts for the door, and Hammond says, "Colonel." Ooh, it's all me. It's a lot of Hammond. So a guard blocks his path, and O'Neill stops, and Hammond approaches him as does Daniel. And Hammond says to O'Neill, "I'm just supposed to let you go?"
Daniel says, "He's already gone, General. I don't think we have much of a choice."
So they let him go. Mm-hmm. But they do not give him a GDO to get back home, because Hammond's like, without knowing where he's going, I don't know what's going to happen. I can't let him come back. So Daniel does, I think Daniel has this conversation with him where he's like, you know, if you go here, you may never be able to come back, right? So he goes through anyway. And he arrives on the other side and sees a group of Asgard. And they can tell he's from Earth. They're talking in their little Asgard language. They recognize that he's speaking the language of the ancients and that he's asking for help. So one of the Asgard use a device that's embedded in their hands, and they like beam ray all the light into him, and they suck the knowledge back.
Okay, but do they actually all have that in future episodes? Because I feel like that's the only time I've seen that.
I think it was just like
a one-time thing.
The fact that it's embedbed in the hand is weird too, instead of just like a device that they like.
Yeah, it was weird.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah. Oh, man. And sorry, if that comes through in whatever, I think we just had like a little tiny earthquake. So that's why no, it's fine. But if it like vibrates weird or my audio is weird, that's why.
It's fine.
But anyway, it's fine. It's fine.
So back on Earth, Sam tries to dial the same address again, but the device that Jack built is shot. Like it was once and done type of thing. And they can't dial out again. But then we go back to the planet that Jack gated to. Mm-hmm. And this is the most wonderful dialogue ever. Mm-hmm. We have Asgard 1, Asgard 2, and O'Neill.
I'll be Asgard 1.
Asgard 2.
And I will be O'Neill. So this is after they suck all the stuff out of his head. And he says, "You understand me?"
"We speak many languages."
"You're the Asgard. Thor's race, right?"
"You have heard of us."
"Nothing but good things."
"You looked into the archive that stores all of the ancients' knowledge."
"Apparently."
"It was not meant for you."
"What? This was all an accident?"
"Human physiology has not advanced to the point where your brain could handle that technology."
"Oh." "So where am I?"
"This is the Asgard planet Othala, in the galaxy of Ida."
"Why did I come here?"
"The ancients moved on from our region of space long ago, but your subconscious mind used their knowledge to find us here, where you could get help."
"Very impressive."
"Well, you know."
"We did not think your brains had advanced even that far."
"How is it you know so much about our brains?"
"We have studied your race closely."
"Ah, what did you learn?"
"That your species has great potential."
"Great potential? That's good."
"Understand this. There was once an alliance of four great races in the galaxy. The Asgard, the Nox."
"Met them."
"The Furlings."
"Don't know them."
"And the Ancients, the builders of the Stargates."
"It's a pretty heady group."
The alliance was built over many millennia. Your race has much to prove before we may interact on that level.
So O'Neill stands up and approaches the two main Asgard. There's more whispering amongst the others. Look, you all seem to be quite wonderful people. And then he crouches down to their level. I love that. And I don't want to sound ungrateful because I really, really appreciate you getting all of that stuff out of my head. But you folks should understand that we're out there now, and we might not be ready for a lot of this stuff, but we're doing the best we can. We are a very curious race. The Asgard exchange glances, and the first Asgard offers O'Neill his hand. O'Neill looks at it and then gently takes it. Then he stands up as the rest of the Asgard look on.
You have already taken the first steps toward becoming the fifth race.
I love this scene so much. And I've said it before that I think only O'Neill could have done it this way. I love that he kneels down so that he can speak to them on their level. And this is something that I learned somewhere along the line of, like, don't ever, if you're talking to somebody, if you're like in an interview or whatever, like, be on the same level as them. If they're sitting, you sit. Because, like, if you're standing over them, it's like intimidating or it can be demeaning, like you're looking and speaking down to them. So always meet people on their level. And these Asgard are like probably 3 or 4 feet tall. They're really short. So I liked that he humbled himself in that way where he came down on his knee and spoke to them face to face. But he kept it really simple, and I think it worked in their favor of, you know, if it was Daniel, he would have been like wigging out, like, oh my God, you guys, we totally need to be friends and I need to know everything. And Jack is just like, hey man, you're pretty cool. And I've met some of you before. And we might not be ready for a lot of the stuff, but we're out there now fighting the good fight pretty much. And, you know, we want to learn as much as possible. So back in the gate room, Sam is trying to gain control of the gate system again. They're not able to close the iris. So I love that. Jack must have like known ahead of time. He's like, I need to disable this shit so I can come back home.
Yeah, no shit.
And they have an incoming wormhole and Jack comes through. And this final scene of Daniel, Teal'c, and O'Neill. Want to read this?
Yep, I'll be Daniel.
Teal'c.
O'Neill.
What happened?
Do you still possess the knowledge of the ancients?
Nope. Don't remember a thing. But you know that meaning of life stuff? I think we're going to be all right. And the episode ends.
I love that. There's so much good and simplicity in this episode because it just, like, I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for the story to like incorporate like political agendas or this or that. They get tugged into so many other episodes and they just didn't. It just wasn't there. It kept it very, you know, like nobody at the NID, like nobody got caught wind of Jack having this. Like they were able to do and operate very freely, which I thought was interesting because there's so many episodes where had someone else gotten involved, it would have gone horribly wrong or could have gone so differently. And I don't know. That's something that I liked about this episode is that there was not a lot of friction in the process. It just was able to exist.
Kind of kept it to the basics, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when you say that, I'm like, man, that would have been a totally different story. And simple is not always bad. People say like, oh, it's like a simple story. Okay. And like, that's not a bad thing. Because I feel like when stories try to make themselves too complex, they get convoluted, they get bogged down. You can't understand it. I've tried to watch TV shows where I'm like, I cannot understand this for the life of me. Like, I cannot follow this. I'm so confused. It seems like it's confusing just for the sake of being confusing. This is not fun.
Because it like Westworld wants you to like take notes, go back,
Westworld,
analyze.
I'm looking at you. Could not.
That and Game of Thrones. Nope.
Yeah.
It's like anytime you read a book and the like cast of characters list is like in the front of the book, and you're like, that means I'm gonna have to be referring back to this because I mean too complicated.
To be fair, Lord of the Rings, I give an exception and a pass to because that's all over the place. But beyond that, yeah, I feel you. It's too many. Yeah,
there's a lot. And I feel like books can be different, but TV shows, I don't know if I just have like really short patience for that kind of shit. Because I did watch Game of Thrones and I could follow it, but then the books are a whole different level, I think. And there's a lot to be had with the books, and they have a fan base for a very good reason. Mm-hmm. But things like Westworld, where it wasn't even a cast of characters. It was so confusing, and the competing timelines of like, this was the past and this was the future, but they don't tell you that. And then it's almost like you have to watch it through and then rewatch it again to understand it. I don't have time for that.
Yeah, no. One time through should be enough.
So simple does not always equal bad. And complex does not equal good. So I like that this was simple and straight to the point, because there was room for a lot of good things in there where it really did expand the universe a lot, talking about who built the Stargates. They're going back to this, or they're revisiting this. Mm-hmm. They're not leaving it open for interpretation. It's like, okay, they really are going to tackle this. This is something that's going to be a theme and a question that they revisit throughout the show. And who are these four races? They call back to that episode with Ernest, and they're bringing up the Asgard again. We get to meet them again, kind of not... I mean, we met them before, but this is more of a very pure first contact of like, hello, we are out there. We come in peace. We mean no harm. We want to be your friend. So there were a couple, like, when I think about themes for this episode, there's not really a lot, because it is a basic first contact meeting an alien type of episode. But then you have the aspect of Jack losing the ability to control his body, losing his faculties, and there's a lot, like, you think of real world comparisons, like diseases like Alzheimer's, or I think it's ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, where you slowly become paralyzed over time and lose the ability to function. There's kind of a body horror in that, where I know what's happening to me and I know what's going to happen to me and I can't control it, and I'm losing the ability to communicate or function properly, and there's nothing I can do to stop
it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of neurological things that make it impossible to communicate, like you're thinking one thing but you're saying something else, or you know, scary stuff.
Very scary stuff. But I think, no, overall, the episode, it was a nice, like, almost palate cleanse, too, because it does give us that next big pillar, like, that next, like, really stake-in-the-ground anchor point, where kind of everything else kind of filled in. Now this is, like, the next, like, launching pad for what's going to happen, which, so I like it.
It's, you know, it's a good old world-expandy episode for me, so.
Yes.
I love it when that happens. It's just, like, that kind of aha, like, wow moment, you know, like, oh, it just got bigger.
way bigger. Because next we have Serpent Song.
No, wait, I thought it was A Matter of Time.
Was it? No.
I think I need to refer to Netflix, because the transcripts were out of order. I don't know if they were filmed one way and then aired another.
Oh, maybe, because I'm even looking at this and it says that A Matter of Time came before The Fifth Race.
So in Netflix, you have Touchstone, The Fifth Race, and then A Matter of Time, and then Holiday.
That's what it is on Google, the Googlace. And then Serpent Song is like episode 18.
Yeah.
What?
I wonder if it's just how they filmed it.
Could be.
They could have honestly rearranged the order of the episodes too, on it, because there's no need for like the continuity if they need to be in this order.
That's true.
Well, it has the air date. So fifth race was January 22nd of 99. Matter of Time was January 29th of 99.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then where's Holly? Okay, so that goes. Okay, so only because I'm looking at the gate app, that app. Hold on.
Fifth race, Matter of Time, Holiday, Serpent Song.
Okay, so this has Matter of Time, then Fifth Race, then Serpent Song, then Holiday.
Yeah, that's I don't wild. Think that's oh. not that's definitely because these air dates are pretty.
Who
telling.
Runs this app? Let me.
Yeah.
Who runs this? I have words. Have questions.
Serpent Song followed by everyone's favorite episode, One False Step.
Oh no. That one, I feel like I want to do some sort of psycho. We got to do something special for that one because it's like, so tragic.
Listen, I want to put this out there. Feel free to veto it. But should we do a drunk episode?
We could do it for One False Step. That's One False Step. Thinking. Yeah. Like, yeah, we'll do that.
We need yes. alcohol we'll for do that, that one, I think. Make it yes. a little fun.
I love it.
Take a shot every time. This happens.
Oh my god. And can we actually like record? That can be what a YouTube one we post up. That could be. I think we need to.
Are you trying to get me in trouble, Christina?
No, I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but I think that would be hysterical to watch.
I'll have my fire poker with me. So
please, that fire poker.
Hard stuff. All right, guys. Oh my god.
Yeah, I love it.
Look forward to.
Oh yes. So right, so next week out? Will be yeah. A Matter of Time.
Yes.
Which is personally, yes. I really like that episode.
It's a good one.
Same girl.
Yeah.
Love
yeah.
that
yes.
one.
Yes. All right, whose turn?
I have no clue anymore.
No idea.
I'm Sarah.
Why me? I'm not prepared. I have lost the philatus to speak, so I'm closing the iris right now.
Done.
There.
That's it.
Nice.